Okay, Rabotai. Start again with the Shem Shmuel. The Inyan of Korach. We know that Korach was the Baal Ruach HaKodesh. Because Rashi says, Korach Shepikeichoy Amar Rol Shtusu. How could he start up with Moshe Rabbeinu after all that happened? You have to be completely crazy. So he wasn't so crazy because, well, he saw that he's going to have a descendant, Shmuel. So he was sure that he would survive. Otherwise, how would he?
Who's his name?
Korach.
Was Shmuel?
Shmuel Anovi was a direct descendant of Korach, a Ben Achaben. So he says, I have such a great gen. It says, Moshe Ran B'chor, another Shmuel B'chor, Shmuel in certain ways compared by David the Melech to Moshe. So, he says, I'm certainly going to survive. What he didn't understand was that he would be killed, but his sons would survive. He didn't imagine that his sons would survive. But okay. So he was a Baal Ruach HaKodesh. How could it be that we see that Korach, there's a lav natov, losiyat k'korach v'chadoso, not supposed to be like Korach? What exactly is that lav, not to be like Korach? So, some Rishonim say, the Tzvi Pshatim in Rishonim, it's mamish lahalacha, what's that issa deraisa, not to be like Korach?
It's one of the tayak.
Yeah, it's kind of the tayak. Right, it's kind of tayak. People should not be like Korach.
Are there two separate things, Korach and Adosa? Is it one thing?
That lab, it seems like one thing in the lab, the way the lab is written. So what is the lab? So the three shot them in the
show. How did he get followers, though? I don't understand how he got people to turn against Moshe.
Right. It's also
people always like to make an uprising.
Question of authority.
Isn't that for Korach, you're not supposed to be too joking about things?
Of course, they're cynical. It doesn't appear in what they were. They're cynics.
Okay.
About
a Jew's not supposed to make jokes all the time. Someone makes too many jokes,
he's like a cynic, a
lates. Makes jokes
for everything. That's a lates, right, that's true. A lates. He doesn't take anything seriously, he's a cynic. That's true. Thus Navirim were great cynics. Made fun of everything. So the lav itself, though, there are three main shot in what the prohibition is not to be like Koch. One shot, simple shot, is not to argue with kahuna. Not to start up with the institution of kahuna and Levi. The Kadosh Baruch Hu chose the Levium and Aaron and his children as Kohanim. Anyone who somehow questions it, makes a rebellion against it, says no, don't need Kohanim.
If I had the Bechorim on his side also.
Right. So that's one shot of the lab. Another pshat in the lav is machlokas in general, to be about machlokas, because Korach was about machlokas. He made a big fight. So even though, let's say, you have a disagreement with somebody, but now to turn it into a fight. That's according to Rabbeinu Yonah. He says that's a lav deraisa. A lav deraisa to make a fight with another Jew.
What do you do when you have a difference of opinion?
You have a difference of opinion, but you can't.
What point does a difference of opinion become a machlokas?
I guess you try not to make it personal.
You should know that.
It depends why you're having the machlokas.
You know, you're going.
If you're doing it because you're having an argument, I guess in halacha, you're doing it with shema, you know, for good reason, you know, then it's fine. But I'm sure, but if you're doing it for your own kavod, it's probably not.
Okay, it's true. But it gets when at some point you know when it's a machloket.
I mean, if you're fighting over a baseball, I mean that's stupid. I mean.
Okay, when now? Okay, that's the second shot. The third shot is the question, the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah, that Moshe Rabbeinu is unique among Nevi'im, because Korach was a Navi. So it's almost like by Miriam and Aaron, where Miriam and Aaron say, Gam banu dibra Hashem, we're also prophets. But there they weren't saying that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy wasn't greater. They just didn't like, they didn't think that his behavior with his wife was justified. So they were saying, even though he's a greater prophet, but that doesn't mean he can separate from his wife. But Korach actually said, I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu is a greater prophet. So Korach only accepted that Saras HaDibros was unique, but he didn't think that Moshe Rabbeinu, in other words, what the Rambam's Yesod, that every word that Moshe Rabbeinu said is it. Kol HaTorah she'en himtzeh b'yodeinu m'Moshe Rabbeinu v'lo tehi Torah acheres, it can never change.
Av l'nevi'im
habayim lefonav, habayim achav, all the ideas of Moshe Rabbeinu's unique in nevuah. In other words, the concept of a cheftz of Torah, the Torah is unique among nevuah. There's Nevi'im, there's Ksuvim, but there's Chamishe Chumshe Torah. The Chamishe Chumshe Torah is a unique kind of Nevuah. It's immutable, it's unchangeable, it's the superior, it's the paragon, it's... So
that's... Wrong, it was just, that was not included in the statement of that it's forever not changing. Like when he said to hit the rock and that was wrong, that wasn't...
What are you asking on his personal behavior? Moshe's personal behavior?
Maybe it's, I think it's a little bit peripheral. But you said that the Rambam said that nothing that Moshe said was ever
changeable.
So when he made a mistake, that wasn't like concluded because you're not talking about his
right. In other words,
like only his Torah.
The words of the Torah, the Chamisha Chumsha Torah, of course, on his personal life, we say he did make a mistake as a person. But when he acted as a, when he related the words of Hashem Yisbarach, that was already, I guess, perfection in that sense. That's the perfect word. The perfect word.
You said every word he said. I
meant every word he said as Torah. Right. Don't forget, Moshe Rabbeinu, besides his personal life, even as a Navi, not every word that he said was actually Nevuah of Torah. I mean the Chamisha Chumsha Torah, because according to one opinion in the Gemara, he was the Navi of Sefer Iyov. And we have in Tehillim, Tefillah LeMoshe. That's not Chamisha Chumsha Torah. The Tefillah LeMoshe is part of Ksuvim. It's a different level. For example, in Ksuvim, you can't make a drasha. You only can make a drasha in the Chamisha Chumsha Torah. Say Kal V'Chomer, or Gzeir Shava. You can read a chateau in the Dreshes Pem. It's only Chamisha Chumshe Torah. You can't darshan Nevi'im and Ksuvim that way. You can't. Ein Navi Rishor L'Chadish Dover. So, for example, a Navi can't tell me a new din. I can't learn out a new din from the Nevuah.
Huh?
Only from Torah.
But there are halachas that we know from
the Gemara, I guess, at
Monday. Yeah. When the things mentioned in Nevi'ah, let's say in Navi, which are new, for example, covered Shabbos, Onik Shabbos, those are really takonis to Rabbanon, which the Navi mentioned. It's not that the Navi is telling me a din deraisa, which Moshe didn't tell us.
Well, there are some laws of Kinyan also.
The 613
mitzvahs. Right. They, for example, say the Kinyan of Chalipin, which is first mentioned in Megillas Rus, which is a deraisa. But he's telling us something which was there from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's not going to be telling us a new din deraisa, which Moshe never told us. That can't be.
It existed, but the Nevi'im just made it more clear.
Sometimes, right, it existed. It would be called Halacha LeMoshe MeSinai, but it was never written down in the Torah Shebichsav. The Navi puts it down, but it's Halacha LeMoshe MeSinai. So Nevuah, so Lo Siyek Korach V'Chadoso, not to be like Korach, means not in any way say or believe something which denigrates or downgrades the uniqueness and the specialness of the Nevuas Moshe as expressed in the Chamishei Chumshei Torah. Right, that's the lav. That, I think, is the way the Rambam interprets the lav. That it's a lav on based on the Yud Gimel Ikrim, on what the Rambam calls basic Torah Min HaShemayim, the Torah Moshe Rabbeinu Min HaShemayim. Okay, so what's strange is, so here the Shem Shmuel has a very strange, interesting question. He says he really can't understand how Korach could have done such a thing. How could Korach actually have such an idea that Moshe, he was living at the same time, how could he possibly come up with such a notion that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nebuah is not unique, it's not superior? He doesn't understand how that could be.
More so, but living at the same time, he sees him as a college.
That's true. So you're explaining it psychologically, that people who have other people colleagues can't recognize their contemporaries' greatness. You also find the phenomenon that family also usually has problems recognizing a family member's greatness, because they see the person as a family person, but they don't see the greatness.
This wasn't the same word by Talmud and Rabbi Akiva, that the felt so much like once, it was in
that. Right, that's the wrong. Right, they were so, they felt everybody is so, they're like one, so they were so friendly and so they didn't understand the great. They didn't understand the greatness. Yes, that's correct. It's a very difficult thing. It happens very often. It's a common thing. So, could be, you're right.
Didn't Korach go that he could be high Misa from the Pasuk of Bo Sasu?
The words of the head of the Sanhedrin. And Moshe Rabbeinu was the head of the Sanhedrin. Yeah. And Korach took with him, Rashi says, Roshei Sanhedrin, people from the Sanhedrin. Masayim Chamish Shemish.
The brethren said that he considered that maybe he could die if he was doing the wrong thing, but he saw that he was going to have a descendant that was great, so he realized, he assumed that it meant he wasn't going to die. He assumed he was doing the right thing, therefore.
Well, one thing is like this. He, because of the Rashi, as you say, and he obviously felt that he was equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. So, your issue of Los Asuras, okay, but if he's equal to Moshe Rabbeinu, so then it doesn't. Don't forget, Moshe Rabbeinu according to Halacha, the one person has the status of a Sanhedrin of Ayin Aleph of 71. He didn't need the other 70. Moshe by himself could pass Dini Nefashos or whatever else a Sanhedrin does. So Korach said, "I'm like Moshe," so he felt he could go against Moshe. But he says it's hard for him to understand how he got to that. And then he finally asks a question that the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Tes, is a machlokas where the Korach v'Adoso get a chelek olam habo. It's a machlokas whether he has a chelek olam habo. It's a Gemara, it's a machlokas in Tanoim.
Or are they talking in Sanhedrin about the only people don't get
benefit? So how could there be such a machlokas if the Gemara also says If someone denies that the Torah is from the Shemayim, a min doesn't accept the Torah from the Shemayim, even one pasuk loses Olam Haba. And if Korach didn't accept Moshe Rabbeinu's statements, for example, all of the things about Aaron and the Kohen, he denied. So that's like the whole Sefer Vayikra. He basically didn't want to accept it. Because
right.
He said, Ten Commandments, we all heard God speak to Moshe, so he accepted that. But Sefer Vayikra, he said, Chas v'shalom, Moshe Rabbeinu made up the whole thing on himself. He goes into the tent and he comes out and says, God told me. I never heard that, he said. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu made the whole thing up. So, how can such a person who's a kofer in the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, how could he possibly have Olam Haba? The Gemara has one, there's an opinion of Gemara that he has Olam Haba.
Rabbi Salman quoted a Medrash today, and said, Vihi Rabbi, the greatest Rabbi in part is Vihi, that they were, Kores Vahadasa, they were going up and down, like bubbling in Gehenna, until Hannah came and she was in Nestalelis and she said, Hashem, Mimis Mechaya, Yoreh Shola V'yala.
Right.
She got the math.
So he says like this. He says he also wants to explain a little bit Korach's question that he says to Moshe Beged, which was full of tcheles. Does it mean tzitzis? He has a beged. What's going? Why did he ask the question about a beged of tcheles? What about a beged which is a white beged? Why should a white beged have tzitzis? Same kind of a question. Yes, if a beged is tcheles beged, why did it need tzitzis of tcheles? It already is tcheles, but he never asked the question about a white beged. He could have asked the same question. Why does my white beged need white tzitzis?
It already has white.
It already is white.
Is there something the about the color of the tzitzis strings, or is the thing about the color only of the tzitzis and the tzitzis strings just that it should be?
That's a stupid question.
Oh, that's a good point. In other words, because tzitzis is a special color, but it's white, may be that you don't need
everybody
one.
Has white.
That's a default.
Maybe, but I'm not sure that everybody would say that. I think a lot of people would say you need dafka white. Okay. It's a very good fresh point. Yes.
One of the reasons why Korach was attacking Moshe because he wanted to become a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol wears a veil that's completely tailless and doesn't have tzitzis. Because it's part of some tzitzis.
Oh, okay. That's a good point. That's good.
Well, there's something that Moshe darshan that
the Kohen Gadol is part of some
tzitzis. The Kohen
is part of some tzitzis. Is there something that Moshe darshaned that Korach was responding to, or was he giving a rhetorical question? Like, was it like...
Oh.
Did he bring it to Moshe, and Moshe's like, no, you still need to play less? Or is he just saying, look, his laws don't make sense, because you could, find a loophole? I'm just curious. It's like a first grade.
It depends how you interpret that. You can interpret it, either it was just a make-fun kind of a question, or it was a very serious question. Most Mephoshim take it as a very serious question, not just a fun mocking question. Some people say because he was arguing Kala Eidu Kulam Kedosha. He was based, one of his arguments,
we don't need you, I'm saying.
We're a democracy. We don't need
a leader.
We don't need a hierarchy. We don't need a bureaucracy. We don't need an aristocracy. All these things which he says you created. You created a leadership and an aristocracy and a genealogy for this aristocracy, and no one can get into it because they're not part of the family. We don't need this. We're all Kulam Kedoshim. We all heard Hashem speak at Har Sinai, and we were all holy Jews, so what do we need this for? So he brings down, you see that you have a foolish idea, because a beggar kulo tcheles, if the whole beggar has the beautiful color, why do they have to add a few extra strings on the bottom? So you want to put strings, something which is superfluous. You want to create something artificial, which he says is not natural. So that's a serious way of interpreting the question. It's a mashal. So, Shem Shmuel has here what I would call a very interesting approach. It's a very interesting thing what he's saying here. He said like this, the primary says, well, he has this whole philosophical and psychological thing, then he gets back to the question of Korach. He says basically the challenge of Torah is a very big challenge in Torah, and that's a problem, a challenge of what he calls being steady, being steadfast versus change. See, we go through life, and there's a challenge in life, because on the one hand, life is full of changes. Especially if you live in America. I think the average person keeps a job in America for 5 years. And I think marriage is now even less than 5 years.
No.
I think so.
It's not possible. The average marriage is in the last 5 years?
It has to be 4 years.
That's sick.
I think so, because people want changes. So you marry for 3 years and you have no wife, marry another wife. It's changes. So life is full of changes. Only certain people, like Rosh Yeshiva, you get a job, you stay in Yeshiva the rest of your life, you live near the Yeshiva. But such, everybody thinks you're sort of a wallflower, stiff. What's wrong with you? Sitting in the same place, no changes. I always said that Rosh Yeshiva can only make one change in his life. He has one job, he stays there for 20, 30 years, he makes one other job, and that's it. You can only make one change. So the question is, so the life is full of changes. He says that actually it's a functional, he calls chomer. The physical world is always changing.
Never.
Right? It's
inevitable. Change is inevitable.
Right? If we wouldn't do anything to these buildings. I always wonder, you see all these guys working day in, day out. I'm so busy. The answer is, that's why the buildings are still here. Because if they wouldn't be busy working all the time, just leave the buildings alone, they would eventually just collapse. This would break and that would break. The physical world is always changing. It's decomposing. It's breaking down all the time. Now, we are physical. So, change is part of our makeup. On the other hand, the Torah is looking for steadfastness, no change, immutability. It should be the same. So I should be doing the same mitzvahs that Yeshua ben Nun was, the same pair of tefillin.
Would you agree with the
same matzah? Yeah.
The statement that it's like sort of a combination of the two. I don't know exactly, but I've heard people say that if you're not going up in kedusha, then you're going down. Like you don't stay the same in kedusha. You have to be.
Also moving. That's true.
Say if you do stay, it would be kedusha. You could stay the same.
That's a good point. What he's saying is a good point. That maybe in kedusha he has also the concept of change, of improving. Okay, but that's in this piece he's not talking about that so much. He's talking about that. In a sense, of course, what you're saying is correct. But when you compare the changes within the physical world, which is very dynamic, versus the change in the spiritual world, you can say the spiritual world is more of a steady state type of a thing. So you wouldn't want, if someone's a tzaddik, he should stay a tzaddik. Of course, you want to rush it to become a tzaddik, to do tshuva, but a tzaddik should stay a tzaddik because he shouldn't really be changing that much.
No. It should add to his sitkhus.
Add. But not like in the physical world, change is much more dramatic, I would say. So we said.
Malachim are
very static. Very
static.
They're very static, that's correct. No, what you're saying is a very good point, the concept of change, spiritual change. It needs, we spoke about that various times, that the concept of spiritual change.
Maybe it's to counteract the physical degradation or whatever, that you need to try to do that extra spiritual, keep on adding so you stay the same, so you don't go down.
That's also true. Well, that might be the symbol of the sulam. Olam v'yodim, you can go up, you go down. Okay. So really it's so he said like this, that this problem of the of change, of physical change, and this is a very, very severe problem for a person who wants to keep a spiritual platform or spiritual equilibrium, steadiness, because the physical world around him is always changing. So it's very difficult to maintain a certain spiritual level if my physical situation is changing. You see it all the time, for example, the people who move from America to Israel. It's really, I'd like to say this because we want everyone to move to Israel. It's a dream, but at the same time, the reality is that usually the challenges of moving to Israel are tremendous when it comes to maintain a spiritual level. Most people who move to Israel encounter, I would definitely say, at the beginning for sure, a spiritual yirida.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Eretz Yisrael.
Because look at the Meraglim. The Meraglim were the first Jews who went to Israel. Did they have a Yerida when they went to Israel? You bet they did.
Why?
I think that was a showing Kedush to land. I mean, certainly when visiting, I've never lived there.
So, well, there's a few things. First of all, since anything which is great has to come with a very heavy entry fee. If you want to get into a situation where you can accomplish a lot,
isn't the exit fee like
there's an entrance fee to get into the game? So if you want to get to Eretz Yisrael, which is the ultimate place for Jews, the Geula, so the entrance is Yisurim. The Gemara says it's going to be problems, and the problems are going to be more spiritual as much as physical. Very grave spiritual problems when you move to Israel. That's the price of getting into that challenge.
Is there any parallel between that and the fact that, like, you know, that Mashiach came from something so like abominable or whatever? Like,
that's also true, right?
Well,
it's another idea, of course. Something great usually to get the Satan or balance. So things are.
Mashiach comes from what abominable?
Mashiach's yichus is terrible. He comes from incest of Lot with his daughters, and Yehuda with Tamar,
who knows what,
and Rus making intermarriage with Elimelech. So why does David HaMelech come from such a terrible yichus?
To lessen to everybody else. There's nothing to do with what you passed.
Well, right. First of all, to show that the greatest of Jews can come from
greatness comes within, no?
From the worst background. So we should never judge a person by his background, because look where David HaMelech came from. And maybe this Jew was also like that.
Shouldn't we hear this from a Ger, though? Because if you're naturally Jewish, you were born into it. If you're a Baal Jew, but it's even a higher level because you came back, and if you're a Ger, it's even a higher level because you want to be like a
believer.
That's right. But a Kohen can't marry.
That's correct.
But of course, that's only because of the way that the Gemara Darshan, that a harlot means a Ger, because the non-Jews used to live like harlots So you assume that they came from a background of being a harlot.
Okay. So, for other reasons why, the Kabbalistic reason is because Mashiach and Geula are such a great thing that the Satan fights with a tooth and nail. So when the Satan sees that this is cooking, a Mashiach Geula process is cooking, he goes full blast to destroy it. So he goes down and he tempts the people and he argues in heaven that God should stop this, it's not right, the people don't deserve it. And people, that's why so many Mashiach processes have always failed, because the Satan gets involved and he, and people can't stand up to him. So therefore God, in his infinite wisdom, hides these things from the Satan. He puts it in a load with his two daughters. The Satan is not going to stop Lot from having incest with his two daughters. He's thrilled that Lot's having with his two daughters. He's not going to stop Tamar from having prostitution with Yehuda, because he's thrilled at that. But meanwhile, God uses those things to make Mashiach. That's the Kabbalistic. It's a very, I would call, very strange and really dangerous notion that that Averos, or things which look like Averos, are really turning in, are really producing the greatest blessings for the world.
Well, they all had a good intention behind them. Every one of those acts had good intentions behind them.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly exactly where the state of Israel is an exact application of that. I saw that in the book of Ema Banim Smecha, an exact application where he asked the question, why is it that all the generations of tzaddikim who desperately wanted to go back to Israel, let it be Rashi, Ramban, who actually went, Yudah Chassid, all of it, the Gra, all of these attempts failed, and then you get a guy like Herzl, who I probably did not know how to daven Kriya Shema, probably didn't know anything, and he decides to bring the Jews back to Israel, and he succeeds. What kind of a crazy thing is this? Why would God do such a crazy thing? So he says, because since it's a Mashiach process, a Gula process, the Satan is definitely going to do everything in his power to stop it. So he, God does it through these kinds of people that the Satan says, well, they're on my side. Shimon Peres, Sharon, Lapid, these people are on my side, so he lets them do it.
Satan doesn't read him.
Mashiach is beneficial to the
right.
Satan.
Satan doesn't read him.
No, he doesn't know.
Yeah, but the Mashiach is beneficial to the Satan.
We have that idea of influence of Satan all over the country.
Right.
It's kind of silly. You can pull him once, but next year figure it out.
Yeah, he seems to be stupid in certain ways. He's smart, he's very sly and tripping up people, but when it comes to himself, he's sort of stupid.
He sees things through a filter. The dog sees black and white, he sees stuff.
Right. So that's that. So anyway, getting back to our main focus, as we said, the great things provide a tremendous spiritual challenge. So you can't be Kona Eretz Yisrael without Yisurim, and usually it involves a real danger of a spiritual downfall. A real danger.
Could it be that there's also just a regular spiritual block? For instance, like by Rabbi Yochanan Kohen Gadol in the Tosfos and Tanis, it says that after 80 years you became Tafi Koras.
Right.
So, like, he asks, how could it be if he's like, Mom, Shizne Hashem didn't answer?
Okay, right. So in other words, yeah, well, if you play in the big leagues, you can fall, you know. If you're in the big leagues, the Kohen Gadol, Misha Gadol Machareza Gadol Mimenu. Right. It's always the way that is. Yeah.
I hear that being used a lot when in Israel, because there's so many religious Jews that are really poor. I say because it's Yisurim.
Okay. All right, that's
part of my impression. Yeah. My impression was that people were just weren't doing Shtadlus. I mean, a lot of things they did, they just moved to Israel without planning ahead.
Right.
And they think, you know, which is very hard.
You can't plan ahead, it doesn't
but
work.
But when the non-religious Jews, where they came, they got the skills, they learned how to farm and everything before they even got to Israel.
That could be.
So I don't
I'm really talking about the spiritual problem. You're talking about the physical.
I heard that explained. Mechomer explained that people have a different spiritual connection when they're in Chutzlaretz. They're connecting in some way. Malachim and when the Jews daven in Chutzlaretz,
connects to the angels.
Some, I don't know.
To the angels.
But in Eretz Yisrael, there's nothing.
Right
there,
Hashem.
They feel like they feel an emptiness because it's actually a high level. That person has to reconnect their spiritual.
Right to cut his
like
bow.
When they're davening, they have to reconnect to a different. They feel like there's nothing there, like they were.
Because you have to go to a higher level to connect at all.
To cut his bow. Each land has their own angel.
So when the
there's no malach in that source, so it goes straight to the bone. You have to have a higher leap. And people can't make that leap. That's a good point. That's interesting. That explains it. Okay.
I also heard an explanation that there's some, like a Jew who goes to South America where there aren't any Jews, they can experience a very high spiritual level davening there because there are no other Jews. I don't know.
There are no other Jews there.
A focus of all the Kedusha in that. I don't know what that means.
Like no one else
you can pick up more Kedusha.
Yes.
Because you're the only.
Because you're the only one who has the connection, so it all comes to you.
But as well, there are millions of Jews.
Oh, that's another theory.
I don't know.
That's another
idea.
That's interesting.
Okay. Well, that's
so people say
amazing.
I went to public school and
I like your first idea better.
Hey. So it's easier for you.
It's here.
I like that first idea. The first idea is very good. So, okay. So as we said, changes, physical changes of location, changes of career, changes obviously of who your marriage partner is, changes of yeshiva, all changes are very challenging and very dangerous for spiritual. Let's focus on the shiur, not on the flies. Are very challenging for keeping spiritual level. So, how does a Jew maintain his spiritual steadiness, at least to be steady, not to fall? So he has a teretz. His teretz is a very interesting teretz. He says the teretz is to be attached to a tzaddik. You're attached to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu is so spiritual, he's such a he calls him a neshama. His guf is really not a guf. His physical side is not a physical side at all. It's just, I guess, the trappings of neshama. He's pure neshama. So when someone's pure neshama, he's purely a soul. So then physical.
So he covered his face. You can look at him. You can't look at pure. You can look at pure neshama.
Right. So therefore, the physical doesn't affect the. We normal people have this combination of the guf with neshama. So we have a problem because our physical being is always in flux. It's always changing. The neshama wants to be steady. In the Tzavodas Hashem, anything maybe grow greater, but it's not looking to disintegrate. The physical is always in the process of disintegration. Buildings collapse, mountains get worn down by rain, things are continuously deteriorating in the physical world. It's breaking down to chemists say the basic elements. So, but the neshama doesn't want to break down. The neshama wants to remain steady and go greater. So. The more neshama a person is, the more they will be able to maintain the level of the steadiness on their spiritual and ruchnius. The more physical they are, the more they'll be subject to breakdown. Because the physical, by its very nature, is something which is always breaking down. Cars break down, houses break down, everything breaks down. So if the neshama is very shvach and lets the physical side of life take over, so it'll be a breakdown. The more neshama one is, the less breakdown there'll be. Now, since Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate person who was more neshama than anything else, because his physical side was really nothing. He didn't need food. He went 120 days with no food. The man didn't need any food, so he was a complete, obviously he didn't sleep. So it was a completely different existence. It wasn't, even though he had a body, a human body, but there was just the trappings. He was essentially just neshama. So therefore he didn't have any kind of he wasn't subject to these breakdowns. He was definitely very steady state. Moshe Rabbeinu was steady state. The Torah it produces is also steady state. It doesn't have change. Torah zulote muchlefes. Torah will not change. So therefore, the more we connect to Moshe Rabbeinu, the steadier we will be. That's why this, in a sense, explains this, what I consider one of the most baffling phenomenons of our present day and age, is this incredible breakdown and change of Zionism. I can't understand how people who had a theory, which they brought millions of Jews around the world because of this theory, and went to war 7-8 times, and thousands of people killed, and then they turn it on its head and break it down and say, no, it's no more of a post-Zionist. Now we don't need a Jewish country anymore. Now it's a Goyish country. So how is this? Is a baffling thing. Where's the steadiness of your belief system? The answer is because of those people who were represented this concept of very physical. They focused on the physical more than on the spiritual. So then it's breakdown, because the physical world is always changing, breaking down. Can't be steady. But the from Jews who are more into the spiritual steady, less physical, they are more steady. And the way you do it is by sticking with Moshe Rabbeinu. So, because he is the ultimate neshama. He says very beautiful verse here. We find that by the two trees in Gan Eden, there was the Eitz HaDa'as, Tov V'Ra, and there's the Eitz HaChaim. The Eitz HaDa'as, Tov V'Ra, and then it says that this is a cherev. After he ate and he's driven out, so God put a cherev, a sword, which is a lat hamesapeches, a twirling sword, twirling and flashing,
double-edged
sword. He says because Tov V'Ra means it's basically what he considers spiritual confusion. It's Tov and Ra. You switch good, one day you're good, one day we're bad. This is the tragedy of man. The tragedy of man. If man would be only bad, would not be as tragic. That's what he is. He's only bad. Okay. But the tragedy of man is that he's good one day and bad the next day. He's good for 1 hour and bad the next hour. This is such a tragic, baffling thing. It's a misapeches. It's a twirling sword. It's tov v'ra at the same time. So this is like such a tragic, baffling phenomenon. But the Eitz HaChaim is steady. What's the Eitz HaChaim? Of course, it's Torah. And someone who's zocher for Eitz HaChaim is steady. He doesn't have these ups and downs, back and forth. He's steady. Steady state. So that's what it says. There's a cherev hamesapeches, which blocks the Eitz HaChaim. The ephemeral or the unsteady state of the physical world, of human personality, which mixes good and bad together, this blocks the achievement of the Eitz HaChaim, which is a steady state, an eternal life, which means steady. Yeah.
It's like a tree that stands in the middle of a raging flood. Raging flood, and someone who grabs onto the tree will be able to survive. It's so steady. But as soon as let go, then be swept away by the flood.
Very good.
So the flood is this.
Is this Kamaim Negrush, the churning waters?
If you hold to a tree in a flood, then you'll be okay.
Well, you won't be drowned, hopefully. If you have strong muscles, you can hold on. So how do you get there? He says, by connecting to Moshe. The more you connect to Moshe, the more you'll be able to hold steady.
How does one connect to Moshe?
Through the Torah? By learning Torah. Torah's Moshe. He says, Moshe got this koach when he was taken from the river by Bas Paro, because it says Kimin Hamay Mishisiu. So the says the Magad Mesharim. The Magad told the Beis Yosef, you know, the Beis Yosef had a Malach who taught him a lot of secrets of Torah. So in that book, Magad Mesharim, one of the secrets he told him was Kimin Hamay Mishisiu. Moshe was pulled out of the water. I mean, he's pulled out of it, he caused this raging flood, which is the world, the waves, the ups, the downs. He was pulled out of that. He was given a steady state. He was given the neshama and very little guf. This is machlokas. Did Moshe develop himself, or was he created by God to be what he was? So this is the theory. He was created by God. And now, my mission is sealed. Right.
Doesn't deteriorate,
steady.
Right. I guess it doesn't need to jive with the other notion. I once heard of Schachter say that Torah is always changing. Something in the Babylonian Talmud that they say that it's always.
The Babylonian Talmud is compared to a Bavel, something which is a big mishmash. That's that's true. Okay. So Moshe would do this. Now, he says like that. The fact is like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu was very necessary for the Jewish people in the desert to maintain steady state, spirituality, because they themselves were slaves, and they were very physical. They were not that spiritual. So they would be very much subject, but because they were so loyal to Moshe, that's what kept them going. But when they lost it, let's say to Chayta Egel, they lost their connection to Moshe, you see how quickly they deteriorated. So he says that's why Chazal called Chachamim Moshe. See, the Gemara every so often calls a rabbi Moshe. What do you say? Because that steady commitment, the spiritual steady commitment, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, was in that Talmud Chacham, in that Jewish leader. It's such an important thing. I was blessed. I had the Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik, so I was blessed. So I have, like, as he calls it, a big tree. So I'm hanging on to the tree. I can't really change that, thank God. I mean, there's certain things which are steady forever. For example, the Torah is it. No, Talmud Torah is it. It's a given, because in my mind, I spent 25 plus years with him. So, I mean, he had plenty of, but everything, like when he opened up his mouth to say Torah, so the world just disappeared. All the ups and downs, all the pressures, all the problems in the world, you know, you read about, you go crazy. You read about Iraq, they're blowing up this, and tomorrow they're going to kill an American, God forbid. And so you can have a mental breakdown. And all these other things, 9/11, reports, whatever. All you're worrying about, I don't know, the Mets did win a game, didn't win a game, whatever. Things are always, you know, distressing. This world is full of distressful things going on. Now the Yankees are sort of reliable. For a while they were giving us also hard to get at the beginning of the year. But so this is nothing new, because by the Rav's years was the same kind of thing, just, you know, maybe different names, a little different event, but pretty much similar issues. War, peace, Israel, life, death, I mean, the ups and downs of the world. But when the Rav opened his mouth to say a Shia, to learn, there was no world. There was only one world, the Torah. That was it. The whole world was the Rambam. And whatever we're talking about, Rashi, Tosfos, Pasuk, and Chumash, that was it. That was like, it was the A to the Z of reality. The rest of the world just disappeared. And then you finish the Shir, and you think about it. You think about it for hours and hours. You know, what did he say and how this works out? You could really spend, I would think, you could really spend the whole day and night in this other world. So, and the so-called real world was not the real world. The real world was the Torah. The real world was the Gemara and the Machlokas and the Gemara and Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam and the Chaim. That's the, and how do I serve Hashem by all of this? That's the real world. Then I would take a break, turn on the radio. Oh, Russia sent troops into Hungary, killed 100,000 Hungarians. Okay, it's a world. I turn off the radio and I go back to the Beis Medrash. It's a really different, the steady state, spiritual level is there. The ups and downs of the so-called real world are much, much less real, much less troublesome, much less. So that's someone is Zocha. You have a Rebbe like that. But this Rebbe gives you that kind of a steadfastness, a kind of a. Imagine, I'm sure that the boys in Lakewood have the same thing with Rebbe Aaron Cutler. It wasn't as if you had a world. And you had a Torah, and you had to like bounce back and forth. There was only one world, the world of the Torah. Everything else, okay, you know, you have to deal with it somewhat. You have to deal with the physical side of the world somewhat.
It's all part of it. It's all part of the Torah.
I mean, but so that's what he says. It's very true for people who are Zohar. I think that Hasidim have a lot of this with their connection to their Rebbe. The Rebbe is also a completely different world. The average Rebbe, I mean, you're sitting there by the table and you're watching him eat gefilte fish. I mean, it's not the world of Iraq, missiles and things. It's a different thing completely. It's a world of whatever the kavanas are, going to the mikveh every day takes you an hour or two. It's busy. You're involved with some other reality. So, but the key, see, we're plain people, we're little people. Where do we come off to this? We attach ourselves to a big man, a big spiritual person he gives us the strength, he shows us the way, and we're able to get into that kind of reality. Which is the connection, and he says that. He says every big time of Chacham, he says, is really a little bit of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's also the Zohar. The Zohar says that the neshama of Moshe is in every tzaddik. So that's the key. That's the secret. The secret is to attach to a person who can be, who is steady. His steadiness will make me steady too.
Do they earn it, or they're born that way with that
dimension? As I said, sometimes they're born, and sometimes they develop it. Moshe Ben itself is a machlokas. Did he develop it, or was he born that way? But tzaddikim, there's some of this way, some of that way. I think that, for example, with the Rav, I think he developed it. I think the Moshe Feinstein was born that way. My personal opinion. To the Babbage, I don't know. I think he was probably born that way. I mean, he worked very hard. Everybody works very hard. But I think that with the Rav, it was more. He worked very, very hard on himself. It wasn't so natural. I think the Moshe Feinstein was much more natural. The Babbage, I'm not so sure.
What do you mean he was natural?
He's a natural tzaddik. He was a natural. He didn't have to struggle so much.
So people like that are sent from Shemaim, you know, sent back whatever neshama from before to help us out. People who don't struggle. If you don't struggle, then. That's what the chances are, that you don't have that bechira. You're sent here to do everybody's sent here to do a mission, but people like that are sent here to do a specific mission to help everybody, and they know what their mission is. Those people know what their mission is. And
oh yeah, I think that the people who are born that way,
they know their mission.
Will know that they're here in order to spread it.
And if they know what their mission is,
I
then
think the people
no
who
bechira.
Struggle to achieve great spirituality may not realize that they should share this with others because they're so involved with their own struggle that they don't. But I think you gain maybe even more from the people who struggle than the people who have it naturally. But in any event, yeah, the Gedol Yisrael are both ways. But the Gedol Yisrael are the key.
So it makes tzaddikim boils down to learning the Torah.
Yeah, I think that learning the Torah is a very important part of it.
And so
Tzaddikim
didn't have Torahs, they didn't say Torahs. And how is one?
I guess you saw the way they davened.
Well, that's not learning. That's not learning the Torah.
Oh, well, the davening is Torah. Sech the brachos is Torah. So.
I mean, most of davening is Torah. Most of davening is from Tehillim and all these.
Well, let's say the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I don't know. The tzaddik, of course, he has machshava diba maisa, so you could connect to him on machshava diba or maisa level, whichever level he talks to you. So there's thought, and there's act, there's talk, and then there's.
So what about them? Are they all equal? What's the teaching about Machshava Diba Maisa? Is there are those three things?
There are those three, and they're different ways of expressing spirituality, and different tzaddikim.
It's a way
to get outstanding in one area or instead of the other, and I, as a student, connect to that tzaddik in this or that way. Now, I think personally that you have to find. I don't think that, for example, the Rav was for everybody. Not at all. I thought that was one of the mistakes. I agree with Rabbi Shechter, but not. He had much more extreme view than I did. But he thought that the Rav should only have 5 people in the shir. I thought that the Rav could have 100 people in the shir, but I don't think that the 100 people had the right to say I'm a Talmud of the Rav as well as anybody else. Every one of the 100 was not an equal student, in my opinion, even though they most of them seemed to feel that they were.
But
they sat there, so they say we're just as good as anybody else.
Kulam
Kadoshim. But you have to pick, you know, who your Rebbe is, who your model is. And I agree, it doesn't necessarily have to be through Talmud Torah.
It's the best way you learn.
Talmud Torah is a very, very good way. It's the best way. It may be the easiest, but some people connect to a Rebbe through Maisa. doing mitzvahs the way the Rebbe wants.
Yeah, if you watch somebody do like somebody do such nice things, so, you know, so and you work with that.
Through tefillah, even sometimes he's a Rebbe through nigun. Like Shlomo Kalibach, he has plenty of talmidim just through his nigunim. They don't know any of his toros, and they don't know any of his meisim, but through his nigunim, he's their inspiration, and he keeps them religious. He keeps them steady. They're connected to God through his niggun. So that's dibur. That's the level of dibur. Yeah.
By tzaddik, by chassidim, a tzaddik is like Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Where a tzaddik is neshama.
Right.
But by litvish, a tzaddik is a group, and it is also with the group. It's not. It's a different.
Yeah, but we're going to shame Shmuel now. Shem Shmuel is a chassid, so he's working with the chassidish of you, that the tzaddik is neshama,
like Moshe,
and that's how the neshama overcomes the guf, and the way you become a tzaddik is by sticking with that tzaddik. You get more neshama, more steady.
Why is that? So anybody can be a neshama. Anyone can be.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a different question. That goes back to the question which was asked a few times here, whether a tzaddik is someone who's born that way or develops. This is the basic issue of the Balatanya's book. It's about the tzaddik gamur versus the tzaddik sheina gamur, that the two kinds of tzaddik and some tzaddikim are born that way. He calls that a tzaddik gamur. And some tzaddikim develop, it's called that tzaddik sheina gamur. Or bainani.
How about the meisim? The Baal HaChani also wrote a section of tzaddikim.
Oh.
And he put a chayrim on it, he said, he wrote, in the front of it, there's a chayrim, bain bohem has a river opens up the sefer, and there's a fire and it's burnt. At the same time that it burnt, the shpala of lady was in it. That's the meisim, they say.
So is the goof, is it bad? It's bad, we should all try to be the shama?
No, it's a clothing thing.
No, I don't think so. It's not bad. It's a question of letting it run wild versus being controlled. Uncontrolled is the problem with the goof, because the goof uncontrolled leads to breakdown. Okay, so now what was this, getting back now to the basic thing. So this whole philosophical discussion we sort of dwelt on a while. Now getting back to the question of Korach. Since Korach felt that he was the same level like Moshe, Korach felt he didn't need a Moshe to keep him on his level. He felt, I'm on this level myself. So that was the mistake. Once he left Moshe Rabbeinu, then he had the breakdown. But he didn't start off with a direct rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu. He started off by saying, I don't need Moshe Rabbeinu. By saying that, that's why he had his breakdown. And one thing led to the next. So, says that Mamela. So that's his basic test. His basic thought is that Korach's mistake was his belief in a certain way, but the Torah says, Kolam Kulam Kedoshim, Sachem Hashem. He didn't think that you needed a great spiritual leader to keep you steady. He thought a person, especially himself, could do it on his own. I'm terrible, I must say, I feel that this strikes very close to home. Because unfortunately in the modern Orthodox, which we're part of, we have a terrible, according to Shem Shmuel, it's a Korach philosophy.
Rav
Chas v'Shalom. Chas v'shalom. When he say the Rav is like this.
No, the Rav has a Avram Basin has a famous thing, the common sense rebellion.
Right, yeah. That's a different angle. The Rav has the angle of common sense.
Common sense rebellion.
Yeah, I'm talking about this point.
Oh, wow, well, I've heard that before.
No, I didn't follow
it. I thought, I'm sorry, excuse me, I didn't
understand. Oh, yeah, I said,
such a thing. Chas v'shalom, I don't know. No, because we're sitting in this institution, you never know. Not Chas v'shalom, I beg forgiveness. I confused it with some other people I know.
I've heard of that common sense rebellion. I learned it in school.
But there are, unfortunately, voices in the modern Orthodox world which say, who needs a tzaddik? Who needs a great rabbi? Who needs a great Talmud Chacham? Who needs a Jewish... We can do it on our own. We can think every rabbi is great, every student is great, kalam kulam kadoshim. Some voices say some voices say things like that.
Look, the whole Ava is kosher. It's true what he says.
That's the basis of total kfira. At the end of the day, Korach denies everything, because if he does denies everything except the Ten Commandments, that he can't deny, but everything else he says Moshe Rabbeinu Chas v'Shalom.
But we still do agree that every, you know, all, I mean, I thought we always we say Kulam Sadikim, you know,
we Kulam say Kulam Kadoshim. Korach was a bright man, but he says true things.
No, I guess
but
you
his
said
application of the concept is wrong.
Which sounds very, very familiar.
But
I'm saying that's why it hurts very much when I read the Shem Shmuel. It hurts very much because it's very close to home. It's an American syndrome. Basically, it's an Americanization of Judaism. Judaism definitely believes in the tzaddik and the Talmud Chacham and the great spiritual leader, and that other people should follow them and cling to them and get strength from them. Judaism is not do your thing. That's America. So this Americanization of do your thing is very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. It leads to Korach. That's what he says. So we can say like this, we have now a fourth pshat. Because it's different pshat than in the lab. You're not allowed to be like Korach. So one pshat was, don't argue against Kohanim. Another pshat was, don't make machlokas in general, be a bal machlokas. The third pshat was, don't go against the pattern of Moshe Rabbeinu being the Adon HaNavi and the pattern of Navi and the Torah given the Sinai. But now we have a fourth pshat. Don't think you can do things. Don't be a do-it-yourselfer. Don't be a going alone kind of a person. I'm everything. I do Judaism on my own. I don't need anyone to guide me, to even to control me religiously. No, it's on my own. No, you must have a Rebbe. You must have a tzaddik. You must have someone greater than you that you can get strength from him. If you think you don't need anybody, you're violating the law of Korach. Okay. Shkayach.
Does that happen when people ask Shmuel for a king? They're saying you don't need a spiritual leader like Shmuel, we need just a king who will
right, that's very good. That would be like that. So how does this explain the question of the Chelet versus the Lavan? So that's where he says something at the end which I didn't understand so well. He says you have to know another piece, and I didn't read the other piece. Lavan, he says, is the connection to God. And Cheles is trying to stay away from sin, from the evil forces. Lavan is the good forces, and Cheles is, the bad force thing. What? Cheles is suffering?
Lavan is clear. It's very
right.
I heard this.
Rav. Okay, so Chelis is dangerous, and Lavan is very good. Lavan is simple. So therefore, so he says, Korach had no problems with Lavan. Connecting to God, yes, he's all for that. So Lavan is not an issue. Korach had a problem with the Chelis. He says, what are you so afraid? What are you so, you have to have, worry about the evil forces and and be so concerned about it. And for that, you need a Moshe Rabbeinu to protect you. You have to cling to him. He's going to lead you through the forest and the jungle. No, it's not so dangerous. We can do it on our own. He doesn't need chelus. He only needs the lover. The chelus might also be the tzaddik, that one stress. So he said, we don't need the hierarchy of the tzaddikim. So this was his problem. So we hope, I mean, it's a shame that everybody will find. I give you a blessing. You should find your tzaddik, find your talmid chacham, find your model, your inspiration, your guide.
What you
want to
look for in a
Rebbe? Someone gives you strength. They should give you strength.
When it happens, you know. It's like a shidduch.
Someone who gives you strength.
Nothing like
that. You can say, because
of course, you're observing. I mean,
found a Rebbe.
Not a question.
So you can say that the kesher between a husband and wife is 40 days before they're born, and a kesher between a chassid and a Rebbe is.
For creation, no? It's an incredible thing. Like, yeah, you know it's right.
I think a Rebbe has to talk to a person's spiritual needs.
Everything. This is everything. There's nothing.
Sure, sensitivity.
Whatever a person feels that he needs spiritually, if he finds a Rebbe. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean the same person doesn't answer all spiritual needs.
I mean, sometimes one finds that one can
sure, I go to right there for something.
But that's where it stops.
Like what?
Sometimes one's not always zoicha to find a Rebbe.
For everything. It's not for something.
It's
for
the Rebbe.
Right.
And it doesn't go beyond that, you know.
Try to find somebody else.
Even a Rebbe.
Like after the Rav, I could not find anybody to replace in the Talmud Torah. There was no. I looked around, but I couldn't find anybody.
Yeah,
however,
Rebbe went there where he looked.
However, no, it wasn't even shayach to find anybody. But in terms of spiritual, emotional, about it's Hashem, well, I found out by Wilson in Brooklyn, I liked him very much. It does a lot for me. He's a great man. I mean, spiritually, I don't go to him for his Talmud Torah. I go to him for his Avodah Hashem.
First Talmud Torah, you learn from your students, no?
Oh, my students are great. I learn a lot from students in terms of Talmud Torah and Avodah Hashem and everything. Yeah, the Talmidei Yosef Mekulam. If a person becomes a Rebbe, he can get from his students tremendous chizuk. No, but it's sure.
Not a joke.
Don't forget, when they're sitting in front of the Rebbe, they're in their best behavior. So. They give us their spiritual power. They share it with us. So. No, we get a lot. That's true. I think that I agree with that. That's good. I got a lot to tell you. But it's nice. That it's great to have it in one person. If you can have it in one person, Torah plus Europe.
So by the Rav was everything.
I don't think you can get everything in one person.
The Rav didn't give you everything, but the Rav. The Rav gave so much Torah.
You need anything else?
Didn't need anything else. It was so powerful. The Torah level was so powerful that even though there was no, he didn't teach me davening, inspirational davening. He didn't teach me inspirational singing. He didn't teach me inspirational action, how to behave. Any of that, but the Torah was so overwhelming. I said that Torah that you have from the Rav to keep me going for my waking hours. If I was up 16 hours a day, I could be thinking about that and be involved with that 16 hours a day. I was eating breakfast, lunch, supper. There was so much there, so powerful, so inspiring that I could think about it the whole day. You didn't have to do anything else. So that's a case where the single-minded focus was so great that that could do everything.
You must know that everyone's tired.
It's the derech of Torah. It's the. But you know, I can say this: it's very hard. Well, you know, it's a hard derech. It's a difficult depth. Okay. Just pure Talmud Torah, pure Lamedus. It's a very difficult depth.
A depth for a Balabas.
It can't, because Balabas is out there in the world. It can't. It's only for someone learning in yeshiva the whole day. It's very hard in this yeshiva to have that depth. This yeshiva is very difficult, because this yeshiva is made for Balabatsin. They're trying to produce engineers, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs.
I love when you cut that in.
There was once a sign that they put in the first hall. I think after that, the lamp came in a couple of years later. I don't know why. Because of fame. But anyway, they put it up. Yeshiva University, lawyers, doctors, engineers, rabbis, Indian chiefs. I don't know why they said
that. Where'd the Indian chief from?
So
you've seen some rabbis.
It's very hard to, in such a place to say only Torah, only Lamedus, because it's producing so many other kinds of careers.
What do you and yours would get out the students?
I think it's so important that a place like this has to be much stronger in tefillah, in davening, and in...
People that have Balabasim also don't have an hour and a half to go in davening.
So I'm saying about...
Balabas doesn't have an hour and a half to shop to go down the shop. Balabas has 30 minutes on a Monday and a Thursday.
Why Hasidus Balabatim daven very nicely? I mean, I don't know there's always, but sometimes as I go into Borough Park.
No, the bottom of Shomer Shabbos are there.
Shomer Shabbos, right? They seem to make their time to daven a mincha for half an hour. 15-minute mincha, they can do a nice 15-minute mincha. Anyway, Shabbos, they certainly daven very nicely and sing the gloom. Okay, I guess the American Orthodox do it too, in a certain way. I don't know. You have to try to. You can't get it from Talmud Torah because the Balabas has a big problem with Talmud Torah being that is because of the way the nature of things. Then I think other aspects are where you express your, you know, central spiritual. Expression. Balabatim have the ability to do maisa, which other people don't. You know, money, put tzedakah, getting involved in projects. That the Balabatim can do chesed, which a regular Talmud Chacham has no wherewithal or no time to do it, no focus. I had a nicer this week with a Balabas. It just shows a tzaddik of a Balabas, a tzaddik of a yid. I had a nicer where this rabbi in Israel called me up that he's involved in a Pidyon Shvuyim case with Avreich, an Israeli guy from a yeshiva. He's in Venezuela. In a prison in Caracas.
What?
I didn't tell you the story. Okay. So I got a call about a week ago. He's already a year of prison in Caracas.
Why?
He was learning in the yeshiva.
In Caracas?
No, in Yerushalayim. With a wife and five children. And his wife had a falafel store. The last few years, the Israeli economy went very bad. So his falafel store went bankrupt and he went broke and he wound up owing $30,000 to creditors for this whatever goods the store facing. And he couldn't pay. And these people are becoming very, very agitated, as Israelis will become if they don't pay them. And they were bothering him and his wife and his children. So he's a Baal Tshuva. So he had friends from his old days, from his earlier identity, before he did tshuva, before he got married and had a wife. So he went to his old friends and said, "Listen, guys, you know, I'm in big trouble. I owe $30,000. I said, "No problem. We remember you from 10 years ago, 15 years ago, a good friend of ours." He gave him $30,000.
They gave him?
Yeah. As a loan. Paid off his normal creditors. And he told him, of course, he would pay them, but of course he could not pay them. And after about 6 months or so, they say, "We need our money back." He says, "You know, we're old friends. It's very hard. I can't do it. Maybe I'll pay you $100 a month. It's taking about 30 years, but..." He said, "We can't wait 30 years. We need the money now." says, you know. Anyway, so he couldn't do it. And then the next week, a car almost ran over his wife. Then a few days later...
What, Nets wrong?
Yeah. Then a few days later, one of his children didn't come home from school for 3 hours. That's what happened. Someone took me and helped me for 3 hours, let me go. And he got a phone call. So you don't pay back the $30,000. You may never see your wife or your children again.
The Russian mafia.
It was a Russian. It was a, it turned into a, there was Russian a Russian. It was a, it was Israeli,
oh,
which turned into a Russian mafia. So he became terrified. So he spoke to his so-called friends who gave him the money. Said, "What can I do? You know, I'm going to be killed here. Why not me? My wife and kids." He said, "We have a deal for you. If you go to Caracas, Venezuela, and pick up a package for us, whether you deliver the package, or for some reason the police don't let you pick out the package, you wind up with, you just go to get the package and bring the stuff from Venezuela, bring it to Spain, and give it to some guy in Spain. Do that, fine. $30,000 is forgiven." So he did it. He went to Venezuela and he got a package. At the airport he was arrested for carrying drugs.
And this is in, so it's coming from Spain to Venezuela.
From Venezuela going to Spain. He was arrested in Caracas.
In Venezuela.
Yeah. So, of course, his wife was desperate. So they raised, so the Gedolim and Esesol gave letters for him. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Steinemann, his Rosh Hashiva, of course. Big Gedolim, Kabbalim. So they raised about a year ago $25,000 to pay for lawyers in Caracas, Venezuela. So there's two goyim for lawyers. They took the money. Garnished, nothing. And he's sitting there in prison, and he's a firm guy, and he can't eat anything. There's no kosher food in Caracas prisons. There's no kosher food in Venezuela prisons. All he can eat is, can't eat anything cooked. All he eats fruits and vegetables, whatever he gets. Milk, I don't know, water. He lost maybe 100 pounds. People are threatening him in the prison. He can only exist in the prison if somebody, if he agreed to join a certain gang against the other prisoners, otherwise...
Can they all speak a different language?
Well, yeah, of course he had to learn how to speak Spanish, I don't know. So, a lot of trouble. So then about 4 or 5 months ago, the rabbi in Caracas, Venezuela, found a Jewish lawyer who's very well connected politically, and this lawyer said, I'll take the case for nothing. In order for me to get him out, though, I need $70,000. For $70,000, I'll get him out.
What do you mean?
So I was called up 2 weeks ago by my
grandma.
Give
the money to who? Was he going to pay somebody off?
A schmear.
It'll cost $70,000. He'll be released. And he already did it. So he has a track record. He did it with other prisoners. So I got a call 2 weeks ago from the rabbi in Israel who sort of knows about my friend, Rabbi Drum from Yeshiva Shiloh. It's Rabbi Reichman. We want to raise the $70,000. You can help us out. It's okay, but we met. I'll try. So very interesting. I have a son who's learning in Brisk. One of my sons learns in Brisk, and he has a roommate. There's a few roommates, all Americans. So I told my son the story. So he told one of his roommates this story. This roommate told it to his father in America, and the father calls me up last week. He said, "Rabbi Reichman, can you confirm the facts?" I says, "Yes, I actually called up the rabbi in Caracas, Venezuela, and I discussed with him the whole story from A to Z." So, and the rabbi in Venezuela confirmed the whole thing. He says he visits him in prison. I even had the phone number of the prisoner. I could call the prisoner too if I want.
But he's a cell phone in his prison?
I don't know. You can reach him if you.
I already spoke to him?
I spoke to the rabbi in Caracas. I don't want to call the prisoner because I don't want... What can I... I don't want to raise his hopes for something that I don't know what I'll do. The rabbi in Caracas, I could speak to. He's a very halachi. He's a Rosh Kollel. He's the chief rabbi of Caracas.
There, what's his name?
Where his name is Peretz, Rabbi Peretz.
So where is this?
Oh, I don't think she was his son.
So anyway, it's a choshev rabbi.
Where is it? Is this what? What's the name?
Caracas, Venezuela.
So is that? Oh no, different place.
So I'm going to tell you the story. My son spoke to his friend in yeshiva, spoke to his father. The father called me up and I told him the maisa. The Rebbe says, I'm going to try to do something. So that was a week ago. I spoke to him on Chavez on a Thursday. He calls me up last week, Monday. So the Rebbe says, I made an appeal in the shul. It's a small shul in Manhattan Beach. Says I raised $11,000. Then he called me up 3 days ago. I said, Reichman, I got now another four. So I went last night, I picked up the other four. So one, so I say, and what is, he's an eye doctor. He's an eye doctor. So I say, an eye doctor. Now meanwhile, the 15 that he raised, I raised another four, five, so put together 20. And the wife had, so the mice of 70,000% to Caracas. Now we're waiting, we'll see. Hopefully next week. But it's very good the money is safe, because this money is by the rabbi. It will only be given to the lawyer after the prisoner is released. So it's not as if that the money can be lost. 70,000 is in safe hands. The lawyer says, I trust the rabbi. I'll lay out what I have to lay out, and I'll get the 70 later from the rabbi after he's released.
The lawyer's also doing a big
thing. The lawyer's mamish a tzaddik. Big tzaddik. Big time
tzaddik.
He's laying out his own $70,000?
That's right. The rabbi, he says he's not going to lay it out until the rabbi had the money. The rabbi got the money last Friday. I called him Karak. He says, I got the money.
And all the money?
Got 70,000.
Wow.
There's still... The wife still owes money. She put together the 70. All right. You know, different people gave, but... She still owes like 30.
Hope she didn't forget from the mafia.
Hope not from the mafia.
Oh my
anyway,
God.
So, the maisa, but I just said to myself, look, one bala bus, what one bala bus can do, he decided to take this mitzvah. He wants to do the pigeon shvuyim. In one Shabbos, he raised $15,000. Now I could go to... It's a koyach of a balabas that Bromishtal gives the balabatim the things that they can do. You're sitting in the yeshiva working on your chayim friskas taira. Now you can get to that thing. Now you can do that mitzvah. Well, it's nice that he spoke to his friend and the friend spoke to the father. But it's a mamish chayisrael full of tzaddikim. In this particular maisa, I see that when it comes to a maisa like this, the response was beautiful. What I did a little bit 1 week, the people were very touched by a pigeon shvuyim case. If you should tell your Israeli friends that they should try to stay out of trouble, it's not so get into trouble. No, it's better to avoid l'chachilah.
It's only forbidden.
We're living in America. Kadosh Baruch Hu put us in America, gives us that chance to do things with financial things. I think about Balabatim. I heard a story. It's a difference between a Jew and a guy. Let's take a quarter. It's finished. they came out.
No, it's still going. It's still going.
What are they doing? Just push that for like a minute.
They want to stop it.
No, hold it for like a minute.